So today's daf in Masechet Brachot, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Mem Aleph. And let's take a look what it is that we've managed to do so far in this exciting parak of Ketzad Mevarchim. And that way we can get ourselves placed a little bit over here. So we started off with our Mishnah of Ketzad Mevarchim, which was simply a description of various minim. What bracha do we make on what kind of things? And we started talking about the things that are specific. We haven't gotten to the idea of a general bracha, which we're going to be discussing later, and that is the bracha of Shakol Nia Bidvaro, which we got to yesterday. We started talking about things that did not have any specific bracha at all. We got to the question about mushrooms or truffles and how they relate to that. And then we went on to the issues of how it is that you would go about eating. So, do you eat it in the normal way? Are you chewing it raw? Did you change it in some fashion by maybe salting an olive? Did you make a vegetable stew and change the vegetables so that they're no longer what they were before? What exactly would be the halacha where the fruits that were mentioned in the first Mishnah are not precisely the way you would be expected to normally eat them? So we spoke about, and that makes a lot of sense. The Seder makes a lot of sense. We talk about the specific brachas. We talk about the specific type of preparations of those things and what would be the din if you made it a little bit different. That led us into questions of preparations of things that already had a bracha, but that subsequently were changed, which included the kugels and the bread kugels and things that already had a bracha that was very specific, and then we broke them down in various ways to make them perhaps less specific. That got us into tremendous machlokas in about what is exactly the defining characteristic. We spoke about the difference between that things that are normally eaten in one fashion and now they're eaten in another fashion. We spoke about the question of the size of the piece, whether a kesayit is the issue, the shape of a piece, the recognizability of a piece. We got all into those questions, which included also the issue of juice and crushed, that was trima, and those were the cases also that went along with the other types of changes. So because of that, we have a very, very clear-cut direction for the beginning of the perek. Then we started getting into the interrelationship of bracha rishona, bracha achrona, with those very special cases where we have something that is similar to a grain, but isn't quite a grain. We spoke about orez, we spoke about dochan. All of that is included in the idea of the type of the species and the mode of preparation of those species. Don't forget to have your borscht or your anigron, and so on and so forth. All of those dinim were included. Somebody is not properly muted over here. Okay, then we moved on to the question of what about the chashivas of the thing that you're eating in terms of what to make the bracha on. Now, this was a whole different question. It started off only binogea a whole challah or a piece of challah. And there was a question whether we're more interested, and remember that that's a big change because for the first time, we weren't talking about the bracha. We were talking about the food stuff. Now, that's a very important change because it triggers the direction I'm going to start taking today, possibly according to one approach. So that was a discussion of Benogea Chala specifically. And then we went on to talk about what if you make the wrong bracha. Now, the reason that we went into that was because part of the understanding of the nature of the development of bracha and the sophistication of bracha was to understand which one is broader and which one is more specific. So first we needed to establish that a broader bracha will indeed pater the more specific bracha, but it's wrong to do so. And that is a very important introduction to today's sugya. But before we get to today's sugya, we need to remember that we finished the story of the beginning of the perek, which was what bracha do we make on what, with the final Mishnah that we talked about yesterday, which was Shakol. And the idea of Shakol was that it was so broad that it included everything. And it even ends up, lahalacha, including pot and yayin, which are so special that the koveya brocha la'atzmo, nonetheless, the Shakol would be inclusive. strangely enough, that Mishnah, which is now going to be analyzed today, ended with something that seemed to have absolutely nothing to do with the first part of the Mishnah, which was a description of Shakol Nia Bidvaro, and mushrooms and truffles, yum yum. And that is the question of what comes first, or something like that. Now, it says if you had, let's just review the closing line of that Mishnah, because we need to understand it perfectly well today. Hayulefanav minim harbe, and you like one of them. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, you always look first to see whether some of these minim were mentioned in the pasuk of the Shevach of Eretz Yisrael. Eretz, Chita, V'sora, and then we go through Te'ina, Rimon, and then Eretz, Zeit Shemen U'Dvash. Is it mentioned there? If it is, it comes first, says Rabbi Yehuda. Whereas according to the Chachamim, you make a bracha on whatever you happen to want, whatever you like. Now, there are two very different ways of understanding that Mishnah, gentlemen, because that might be referring to the food, or it might be referring to the bracha. If it's referring to the food, then it has nothing to do with lahakdim. It might be very early in the morning, especially in Providence, which would mean that if you lit your light, we could actually see your face. So the question is it a reference to the food stuff? So you've got a lot of different foods. They may have the same bracha. Is there an issue of choosing the right food? Now, the thing that we had this before, of course, was only benugei the challah, a whole challah or broken challah. So where do you add the idea of the concept of the covet of the bracha, that it should be made on the food that is most suitable to bring out its power and its specificity? So then, if that's what it means, we would be looking not at kidima, because remember, kidima is a word that we use where we have two things to do. Which one comes first? That would be the wrong word to use if we're talking about foods that all have the same bracha, and we're just looking to decide which one we should choose, not which one comes first. So that word would be adif. If we're talking about a series of different brachas, which bracha do you make before the other bracha, then we would use the word kodem, which one comes before the other. Now, that's the code word for understanding our sugya. And that's our question. What did the Mishnah mean? When it said you had a lot of things in front of you to eat, it might be referring to different foods with the same bracha, or it might be referring to foods, each one of which had a different bracha. And Rabbi Yehuda was saying that a bracha that would be mentioned in the parsha of Eretz Yisrael first would be the bracha that you would have to make. Now, that's very interesting because, look, the first species that's mentioned in the pasuk of Eretz Yisrael is chita. What bracha do you make on chita? It's incorrect to say you make a bracha of mizonos on chita. You only make a bracha of mizonos on chita after you've processed it. But what if you pop a chita into your mouth and you koseis at the chita that we said before? What would the bracha be? Ha'adama. So if it meant the kedima of brachas, it would mean that the bracha of ha'adama on a chita would come before the bracha of ha'etz on, let's say, a rimon, because the chita came first, right? So that would give us a completely different vision of what the nature of the Mishnah was. So let's take a look now. We're up to the two dots on Mem Aleph and see how it is that the Gemara defines the Mishnah. Omar Ulam, when it says,
"Are you make on a soothing drink?"
Ay, ay, ay. What do you make on eating an archaeologist? Good, good, good. Excellent. Okay. Beautiful. You're a genius, you know. So the Mishnah talks about a case where you've got a lot of different things. What does that mean? Omar Ula. What we're talking about is where they're all the same bracha. Rabbi Yehuda is talking about what food is adif, not what thing is kodem. So min shiva adif. Whereas the rabbonim say, look, a bracha is all about your enjoyment of the world. And therefore, the adifut, the thing that you want to choose, is the thing that you're going to feel the greatest need to say a bracha over. And that would mean whatever you like should come first. So min chaviv adif. But if ein birchoteim shavot, I mean, so then one has nothing to do with the other. One bracha is not going to potter the other bracha. So then everybody says, do whatever you want, you know, be mevorech al zeh, v'chozer mevorech al zeh. Now, gentlemen, remember that we did have the din before, as Tosis points out, that a bracha that is more sophisticated should always come first. And we already discussed that in terms of what? The poor two guys that lost their lives for accepting an invitation from Bar Kappara. So what were they discussing over there? Whether the shahakol would come if they learned that a soup was a shahakol, so then you can't make the bracha on the soup or on the stew because a shahakol will never come before something that was more specific. And in that case, the chicken was definitely a shahakol. And remember, we were discussing whether they should have made the bracha on the kruv, which might have been a adama, instead of on the shahakol. How come we're ignoring, asks Tosfos, the issue of which bracha would be more sophisticated? We already raised that issue. So Tosfos explains that at this point in the Gemara's development, we do not see a concept of growing sophistication. We see only black and white. The black and white is the difference between shahakol and all other brachas. Why? Because shahakol doesn't mention anything that is specific. It's the very word of the bracha is everything, whatever. Obviously, whatever is going to always be less meaningful than something. And therefore, that's all that we understand at this point. And there, what we're talking about over here in terms of species obviously does not include shahakol at all. So therefore, we can effectively at this point ignore that issue. And we're only talking about the question of whether the minim of Eretz Yisrael are more chashuv or what you want is more chashuv. Because if it will be a question of different brachas, then you can do whatever you want, because one has absolutely nothing to do with the other, unless, of course, one of them is a shahakol and the other is a specific bracha. Fine. So if that's the case, if ein birkoteim shavot, the way I understand the Mishnah is that it's irrelevant to that case. Ask the Gemara from a bright, a mitzvah. Hayulafanav tznon v'zayit. Now, what we're talking about is comparing apples and oranges, right? So he's saying if you're talking about apples and oranges, they're the same bracha. But if you'd be talking about apples and radishes, so then apples and radishes, then it doesn't make any difference. But here we have exactly that case in the Braita. So if somebody has a radish and an olive, he should be mevorech first on the radish and then be poter the zayit. Now, this is, in general, at this point, seems to violate what we now know about brachas. Because what it's saying over here is, if you've got an opportunity to use the broader bracha, use the broader bracha to potter two things instead of making the specific bracha first, in which case you'll have to make two brachas. Now, that is not the halacha. The halacha is exactly the opposite. As we said before, you always make the bracha on the specific bracha first. Here it's telling us the opposite, but that certainly means that there is a violation of what it is that we thought we were talking about, because you said it makes absolutely no difference if they're going to be two different brachas, and it's exactly what we have over here. Ha'adama on the radish is what you should say before you say ha'etz on the olive, which is astounding. Says the Gemara, no, that bright is talking about a completely different concept, which also involves determining which bracha to make. And that is the din of Iker and Tafel. And we're raising now a whole new idea. Iker and Tafel is about which thing is the most important part of what you're eating. So we're talking about over here that you basically had made a salad with olives, with radishes. Now, radish is very, very sharp. So in order to make it a little bit sweeter and easier to eat, because of that, you put in the olive or the olive oil. And that is often what we do, right? But it's there not as the main ingredient. It's there only in order to make the radish salad more edible. So obviously, in that case, you will be mevorech on the radish, says the Gemara. Now, wait a minute. If that's the case, how do you understand the continuation? Okay, let me say for Rabbi Yehuda Aimer, that even in that case, it says that according to Rabbi Yehuda, you say the broch on the olive because the olive is part of the Shivas HaMinim. Well, now, what is that supposed to mean? Are you trying to tell me that Reb Yehuda doesn't hold of the Yisod of Iker V'Tafel? Let's say Reb Yehuda to the Beferish Mishnah. And that Mishnah, and we're going to have a little bit later, is fundamental. Koshu Iker V'Yemot Tefillah, Mevorech Ala Iker, U'Poter Et HaTefillah. So if you have a primary food together with a secondary food, always make the bracha on the primary food. If you're going to tell me that a Reb Yehuda over here says, no, we're talking about, even though we're talking about a radish salad, make the bracha on the olive, then that violates that Mishnah, right? And don't try to tell me that indeed Reb Yehuda doesn't hold to that Mishnah. We know that he does, because of Atanya, Reb Yehuda himself, Omer, that imach matznon ba'azayit, if indeed the zayit was coming only in order to make the radish salad more edible, then of course I agree that mevarech al tznon u'poteret hazayit. So he does agree to that. So then that means that the first part of the braita was not talking about a case where it was coming for radish salad, right? Says the Gemara, no. We're going to have to do a little bit of surgery over here. The truth is the entire braita only makes sense if we're talking about a radish salad. The radish is the ikar. And the Reb Yehuda and the Rabbanan were arguing about a totally different topic over here. Where's the different topic? Oh, the different topic is chaser mechaser. You're going to have to put in these words, okay? And here's how we ought to read the bracha. So then you make the bracha on the tznon, upoteret hazayit, and everybody agrees to that. But please mute yourself. When do we say that dafka with a tznon is the ikar? Bobby, thank you. With its known is the ikar, and everything else is, even the olive is now a secondary food to the tznon. But this is the addition that we made. But if the tznon is not the ikar, then everybody would agree that you would need two different types of bracha. So fine. So then you make the bracha whenever one you want, which is the way that Ula's been explaining things. Now add the following as well. What about if you have, in general, you've got two different species where the bracha is the same? So the Tanakhama says, Mevorach al Izbam Shiyirtza, which is consistent with our mission according to Ula and Reb Yehuda Eimer, that always take one of the Shiva Saminim. Because of that, you will be Mevorach on the olive, because it's from it mean Shiva. Okay. There's a Machlokas Amaroim, apparently, about what the Machlokas between Reb Yehuda and the Chachomim are. Not everybody agrees that the way that Ula understands it is, and that is that it's referring to a question of adifut, that's true, and that it's not referring to a question of different brachas. So actually, Pliga Barabami Reb Yitzchak Nafcha, one of them says, like Ula, Chadamar Machloket Peshabir Choteim Shavot, and if it's the same bracha, we're arguing about what food is the more appropriate one to make the bracha. Doc, are you able to hear today okay? Everything good? Okay, I don't know what happened yesterday. So over there, Reb Yehuda holds Min Shiva is Adif, and the Chachamim hold that Chaviv is Adif. But if you've got different brachas, everybody would agree, just like Ula said, everybody would agree, you make one bracha, then you make the other bracha, whatever it is that you want, because one has nothing to do with the other. Whereas the other one of the two Amoraim says, no, they're arguing even B'she'ein Birchoteim Shavot Nami Machloket. Well, what the world would be the machloket about that? I mean, Bishlam Lamadim Rikish Brichotem Shavot Machloket Shapir, according to the way we're learning, which was the way Ula was learning, that the question is Adifut. So the question is, okay, I understand very clearly. What is Adif? Which foodstuff is more appropriate to make the bracha on? Just as the covet of the bracha. I mean, it's the same bracha anyway, right? So I understand that. Is it the Shivas Haminim? Is it your particular relationship? Very good. But if you hold it, we're talking about different brachas, what the heck would they be arguing about? You're going to have to make two separate brachas anyway. So why are we discussing which bracha to make? Both brachas. So, Lamandiyom Reb Shein Brachotayim Shavuot Plige, what's the machlokas? Reb Yirmiyah, man, you guys are missing the whole point. The point of the issue here is a new concept, which is kedima in brachas, not a defoot of the foodstuff, but rather the kedima of which bracha is more chashuv, which is a totally different idea. And we see this from Reb Yosef, or something it was Reb Yitzchak, kol ha-mugdam b'posik zeh, mugdam livracha. Anything that comes first in the posik is the one that is mechayev the bracha first. So therefore, when it says, Eretz chita u'saora v'gefen u'teina v'rimon, Eretz zeit shemen u'dvash, in that order is the order that you should make. Yes, Barnea says priority versus precedence. Fine. Okay, helpful maybe. Anyway, Upliga the Rebbe Chanan. Now this that Rebbe Yosef said, or Itaim Rebbe Yitzchak said, is not what Rebbe Chanan said, because Rebbe Chanan said the posik is not about the chashivas of the peiros of Eretz Yisrael in the order in which they're listed, And therefore it's saying, here are the most important peros in the world, and those are the peros of Eretz Yisrael. No, no, that's not what the pasuk is about. The pasuk is about the incredible fact that Eretz Yisrael is so valuable that the peros that grow there are the source of the halachas of all of the different dinim in the Torah. So it shows us the profound interrelationship of Torah and Eretz Yisrael itself. Kol ha-pasuk hazeh is kulo l'shiurim ne'emar. So let's say it's a schita. What is schita referring to? Oh, schita is an amazing situation. Remember, we have a concept called a tumas bia of mitzorah, which is a little bit similar to tumas ohel. But an ohel, of course, is an instant transfer of tuma. A tumas bia is different. Tumas bia means that if somebody walks into a bayit that's menugah, or an ohel, or under a tree, where someone who has tzoras is there, then he becomes tamei. But he only becomes tamei in special ways. So here's the case. If somebody who's nichlas l'bayit ha-menugah, v'kilav ha-ketefav, v'sandalav, v'taba'otav, b'yadav, this guy's a real sports guy, you know? So he's somebody who walks in to a house, or actually could be under a tree. Now, he's not wearing anything, this guy, because he just came from this amazing run, you know? So he's carrying all of his clothes on the back of his thumb, you know, behind him. Of course, you know, since he's this kind of guy, he's also got all kinds of rings and necklaces. Man, oh man, this guy's a real sportster, let me tell you. And he's got his Nikes also in his hand. So what happens over there? Everything that he's carrying, including himself, becomes tamei instantly. But suppose he was sort of a normal human being who was actually wearing his clothes, an amazing idea, and he's got, well, he's still a sportster because he got all these rings and everything that he's also wearing, okay? So, and then the din is that his clothes do not become tame. Why? Because, as we could see in any clothing store, a lot of this stuff is accessories. Well, if you look at it from the point of view of the first guy, all the clothing is accessories, right? So basically, anything which is an accessory after the fact is not going to become tamei instantly as if it was brought in on its own. So then he becomes tamei right away, but they remain tahar until he actually is in the house for enough time for it to be considered that he's sort of like living in that house. So over there, it's not haba elabayit because they weren't ba elabayit. What is that shear? The shear is the amount of time it takes to eat an achilas pras, which is a half a loaf of chitim. And that's the chita, not se'orim, which takes longer to eat. And eating it while he's concentrating on eating. He's sitting back and he's eating it together with some chumas, makes it easy to eat fast and so on. The next thing in the pasuk is se'ora, the tanat. Se'ora is the din of tumas meis. An etzem ki se'ora is metame b'magam amasa, but it's not metame b'oil. Next thing in the pasuk is gefen. What is gefen? Interestingly enough, by coincidence, gefen is the shear of what it is usur for a nazir. But it does not mean what you think it means. It doesn't mean to teach me that a nazir is over if he drinks a revius of wine, because that has nothing to do with the pasuk of gefen. That's a din in all drinking of all isur. If you made a neder that you're not going to drink Coca-Cola, the shear of the Coca-Cola would be a revius. So that has nothing to do with the shear of revius. It's the same thing as revius yayin l'nazir. This is a very, very beautiful halacha, which has to do with the fact that the nazir is not allowed to eat products of the gefen. So how do we define the shear of eating? Normally, the shear of eating is a kezayit, but the shear of eating for a nazir is a revius yayin of how does that work? How can you eat a revius? Ah, here's what's so beautiful and why it relates to the species. Displacement. So in order to get a displaced amount of a revius, you put in the pieces of the grapes, and then when you've displaced a revius, then that's the shear that he will be over. So you'll say, okay, so if it's a displacement, it might as well say mayim. What's the difference if it's water, if it's yayin? And here's the beauty of the pasuk. Since we're talking about nazir, you say, wow, it's totally coincidental that it says yayin, right? Wrong. Yayin has a completely different surface tension than water does. It has actually a higher surface tension, which means that when you're displacing the amount of a revius of wine, you're going to have to put more stuff in to displace it because the wine is simply sticking to the top of the cup and it's going above the cup. So therefore, you can only achieve the measurement of the Revias using wine. But if you would try to get that measurement with water, you'd be getting the wrong measurement. Gorgeous. So that's the shear of Kedei Revias Yailanaz, Te'ena. Te'ena is the normal size of Hotzah on Shabbos, Merushus, or Rishus, and that's a grogeret, which is a dry Te'ena. Rimon. Rimon is kiditzan kol klei ba'alei batim shiuram kerimonim. If you're a manufacturer, obviously you cannot tolerate with your quality control the slightest hole in something. Nobody's going to buy it. You just dump it. But if you're a balabayit, as we know, there's that horrible phenomena of holding on to things, even though your guests think you're insane holding on to them. You don't notice. You just remember it used to be really nice, you know? So when it got the first hole in it, and it no longer held the olives that you were serving, you figured, okay, what the heck? It's my beautiful serving bowl. Let me put nuts into it. When the nuts started falling through the hole, you said, okay, what the heck? I'll put pomegranates in it. Now when the pomegranates start falling through the hole, then it loses its shame, even as a kli, even for a balabayit. That's the point. So the balabayit, the shear would be rimonim. And then why does it say at the end, Ered Zeit Shemen Udvash? Shomer Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chanina, the Ered Zeit Shemen means the land in which every shear has to do with a zayit. What do you mean every shear? You just gave me a list of six things that have nothing to do with olives. And why did you tell me everything? Kosher, Eatzakat, Eitach, what about the ones we just said? I meant Rov Shiorea Kazeti. Most things have to do with the Zayat. So if you're talking about the Isser of Dam, or you're talking about Pigol, Noser, Chelev, or a Kazayas Bosser of the Mace that's Matame Ba'el, whatever, almost everything that you could think of, the Shear is a Kazayas. And then when it says at the end, Udvash, what is Dvash? Dvash is the one thing we haven't mentioned, which is dates. And where is that, a shear? That's on Yom Kippur. Because remember, the Isser of Yom Kippur is not eating, which would be a kezayit. It's rather a violation of inui nefesh. So it's something that gives you a sense of satisfaction, and that would be a kotevet agasa, a nice, fat, delicious, juicy, what do they call them, midjol? Barnea, you know what they're called, the midjol. Yes.
Midjol dates, and I'm going in a few minutes to a midjol grove.
There we go. So Barnea will soon be in his neighborhood for today.
But Rebbe needs a
Revias Mayim. Barnea will soon be in his Medjol neighborhood, and he will be holding forth a Medjol date for us so that we can actually see it. That's the shear of eating on Yom Kippur.
And they make date beer that you can drink on Pesach.
Amazing. Okay, so now, if that is the way we understood the meaning of the Pasuk, then it would no longer have anything to do with Kedima LeBrachas. So what would Rabbi Yosef say to that? Or if it was Rabbi Yitzchak, what would he say? He would say, oh, come on, guys, does it say anything about a bayit hamenugah or about tamei meis or about all the other things that you're talking about, Yom Kippur, Shabbos? I don't see a word about that in the Pasuk. Obviously, it's only in a smachta. Then we're talking about the Rabbanan being koveya, the shiurim in this Pasuk, as an smachta. But meanwhile, the main point of the Pasuk is to tell me the chashivas of the Paris of Eretz Yisrael. Now, Rav Chista and Rav Menuna were once at a seudah together, and they bring tamrei v'rimoni. So Rav Menuna goes, and he makes his bracha on pomegranates before the dates. On the dates before the pomegranates. And you would have thought he should have made the bracha on the pomegranates, because tamarim are the fifth in the pasuk, and the dates is the very last thing. That's the dvash, right? So Rav Chista said to him, wait a minute. You mean you don't hold of that beautiful drasha that Rabbi Yosef or Rabbi Yitzchak said, that kol ha-mukdam b'posik zeh kodem l'vracha, and that there's a din of kedima in brachas, and that therefore we should have made the bracha on number 5 instead of on number 7? Amalei, well, of course I do. But don't you understand that the whole point of that drasha is that the closer you are to the Shevach Ha'aretz, the more valuable you are. So the pomegranate is number 5 from the word Eretz, whereas the date is number 2 from the Eretz. Eretz, Zeit, Shemen, Udvash. What's more close to Eretz, 5 or 2? Zeh Sheni La'aretz, Zeh Chamishi La'aretz. Oh my God. Rav Chista was blown away. What an incredible, out-of-the-envelope way of looking at things. So Amalei said, oh, I wish that I had legs that were made out of steel so that I could follow you around for the rest of your life and keep learning from you. That would be amazing. Itma. Tosis points out, by the way, that if you've got number two of the first aretz and number two of the second aretz, so then obviously number two of the first aretz would come before number two of the second aretz, because that's also would be more korov in terms of the kedim and the posse. Havil if they empty einim v'anavim b'tocha seuda. How about if during the meal you bring different things which are normally not eaten as something that you eat on your bread, for sure, right? So these are things normally you would eat like for a dessert. Omrevuna to unim bracha lifnehem ve'ein to unim bracha la'achrehem. You do need to say a bracha before, but the birkat hamazon will pater even those things that otherwise you might have made a bracha achas me'en sholoshan. V'chein omrev Nachman, make a bracha before, because they're not bottle to the bread, but they do not require a separate bracha afterwards, because the bracha of Sholosh brachas and brachas amazayin is going to pater them. Rav Sheshes Amar, Rav Sheshes disagrees. And he says you have to make a bracha before and after. She'ein lecha davar she'ton bracha lefanav ve'ein ton bracha l'acharav. There's no such thing as something that requires a bracha before it, but does not require a bracha after it, except for pat haba b'kisnim bilvad. The only case that there is such a thing is where you have pat haba b'kisnin. So therefore, this would not, being as their fruit, are not pat haba b'kisnin. We'll talk about it in a second. Upligit Rabbi Chiya, which is against the sheet of Rabbi Chiya, where Rabbi Chiya says, look, anything that's coming, machmat pat, it's pottering any type of thing, even fruits that you eat during the meal. And wine will potter anything that you drink. Yayin poter kol mine mashkin. And Omer of Papa lahalocha, the din is like this. Dvorim habaim machmata su'uda betocha su'uda. So things that you're eating because of the meal, during that meal, ain tu'unim bracha, lo lifnehem velo la'acharehem. Now, this is a source of a very powerful machlokas between Rashi and the other Rishonim. And Tosis proves from our sugya that as opposed to Rashi, who understands boi machmat ha-su'uda, that they're coming in order to lafet et ha-pat, Tosis points out the din of the lafet et ha-pat is not this halacha of boi machmat ha-su'uda. Cannot be, as we'll soon see. And in fact, the din of the lafet et ha-pat, that's a normal din of ikar v'tofel. Over here, we're saying something much more powerful, and that is that if you're eating something that is not being eaten together with the bread, but it's being eaten only because you settled down to have a seuda, which is based on bread. So, for instance, suppose you got a potato kugel. So the potato kugel is being eaten together with the seuda because you sat down to have a seuda. It doesn't mean you put potato kugel on your bread to eat it. And the same thing is true of the steak. You know, you're eating the steak. It doesn't mean you're making a sandwich necessarily. But eating the steak, it's not, shouldn't be tufel to the bread, but it is, because it's tufel to the seuda. That's the point, not to the bread. And that's the chiddush of this halacha, says Tosfos. So that's, of course, how it is that we paskin. But if there are things that are not related to the meal and would not normally have been brought during a meal, so then you need to make a bracha lifnehem, but you do not make a bracha la'achareihem, because you're going to potter them with birkat hamazon. If you eat it after the meal is completed, and then they have nothing to do with the meal, then to anim bracha bein lifnehem ubein la'achareihem. Shalu et ben zoman, they asked ben zoman b'pnei ma amru dvarim abaim mimachmat ha-su'uda b'toch ha-su'uda einam to anim bracha lo lifnehem v'lo la'achareihem. Why? And Ben Zoma said to them, because the pot, being the ikar of the seuda, potters all of those things. So then they asked Ben Zoma, if that's the case. Now, this is one of Tosis' main riyas against Rashi, that the following question is nonsensical according to Rashi. They asked Ben Zoma, if that's the case, why doesn't the bread potter the wine that you drink in the seuda? According to Rashi, it makes no sense. You're certainly not drinking the wine by pouring it on your bread. So it's not there lafet be'emet hapat. It's only coming because right now you would not be drinking wine if you weren't in the middle of this fancy meal which you're drinking the wine for. It's part of the sense of chashivas that you have with the food that you're eating. So if that's the case, it's coming because of the meal. So then you shouldn't even make a bracha on wine. Now that is a beautiful raya to Tosfos. And Ben Zoma said, Shaina Yayin, wine is different because the wine is Gorim Bracha La'atzmo. Now Gorim Bracha La'atzmo, Rashi has the most beautiful approach. Beautiful. Now, everybody else just learns, you know, because it's so choshev that you say it on all these occasions. Rashi says the point of it, Gorim Bracha La'atzmo, is we never have the case in which you are being asked to make a bracha. You only make a bracha if you want to eat the food. Nobody is going to tell you if you've got two challahs, a shalem and a broken one, and you don't want to eat the shalem, that you should make a bracha on the shalem. Nobody's telling you if you have one of the shivas haminim and another fruit, make the bracha on the shivas haminim. If you don't want to eat that fruit, that's ridiculous. The only time that it's not true is wine. You come to your seuda, and we're telling you, listen, drink wine. But I don't like wine. I don't give a damn if you like wine. You're going to drink that wine, and you're going to say Kiddush. So over there, the bracha is not a din in the bracha on the food. It's a gorim la'atzmo, and therefore it cannot be included in a bracha that is just being made for the food. Brilliant. Really beautiful.